such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Welcome, everyone. God bless you for tuning into The Winds of Change, whether you're live at your lunch hour on a wonderful Wednesday afternoon, or you're listening through podcast, which you can always do by searching through Podbean and looking for Winds of Change Chicago. God bless you. Father Tom Coy's here with you. That's the, oh my goodness, it is.
Who am I? The one.
There is. Some of you obviously know where that soundbite comes from The Matrix. That is one of my favorite resurrection Hollywood scenes. Resurrection Hollywood scenes, right?
Wow.
It's
you just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, in order to get to the resurrection of Easter, we got to plug through Lent, right? And Lent pushes us to think about changing our lives, getting rid of bad habits, putting on good habits, growing in holiness, being a better person and a better Catholic, a saint, right? Those are all difficult things as we strive to understand the Lord's passion, death, and resurrection. Anywho, I'm going to see if I could zip through a whole bunch of things. We'll see if we can get through. I have to share with you some beautiful insights that I get from good old G.K. Chesterton, one of my heroes, and his amazing book, that one of the few things that he wrote after becoming Catholic. Well, he did write a bunch of things, but it's amazing that so much that he wrote that he's famous for, he wrote before he became Catholic, like Orthodoxy, which is an amazing little bit of information that I didn't realize. He wrote it before he became Catholic, and yet reading it, you see how illuminating and beautiful he's painting the picture of Catholicism. His friend Hilaire Belloc said at one point that he didn't think G.K. would ever become Catholic, but he was delighted when he did. His wife had a lot to do with that lack or slowness of converting. That's an interesting dynamic that happens a lot of times. Sometimes when a man starts seeing the beauty and the importance of Catholic doctrine and the faithfulness of Catholicism through the ages, the wife will resist, but not usually on certain intellectual grounds. There's other grounds of, shall we say, family loyalty or feelings, negative feelings about it, hard to swallow, as it were. Remember, speaking of swallowing and referring to the Matrix, we must remember the red pill and the blue pill. Remember when Morpheus offers Neo the red pill or the blue pill, he says, "Remember, all I'm promising you is the truth." So embracing the faith doesn't necessarily solve our problems. That's a great, sad expectation we might have. but it's embracing the truth. So if your mind and your heart aren't really interested in what is true versus what is a hearsay, what is opinion, then you're not going to be led to a deeper conversion, as it were. And since we're in Lent, and Lent is the traditional time when especially adult Catholics are received into the Catholic Church at the Easter Vigil. Sometimes, yes, sometimes. This year it's kind of crazy because with Mr. COVID still alive and well, the bishops are giving a delegation to pastors to confirm in the parishes. So many of you who may know somebody who's looking to become Catholic, I'm telling my people that there's a little good, there's good and bad in it. The good is that we don't have to worry about the bishop's schedule. So when schedules get conflicting, we can more easily adapt to our local situation. But there is something kind of neat about getting confirmed by the bishop. It introduces the person to the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, and that certainly is a big part of the Catholic Church. Notice what I said there, my friends. Hierarchy of the Catholic Church. I didn't use a word that's used all the time by even some of the people I really like and admire, but especially those that are anti-Catholic. They often use the word monarchy. The Catholic Church is run by a monarchy. I'm on a little crusade to stop that word from being used in describing what we know as the magisterium, which is a hierarchy, but it's nowhere near a monarchy in the sense that a monarch has always been associated with a royal family. Monarchy without a royal family, monarchy without the right to succession or the fact that the children, boy or girl, of the king and queen are in line to the throne. That never happens in Catholicism because the head hierarch, the head of our hierarchy, namely the Pope, doesn't have children to pass the throne to. So there has to be that election of the cardinals, and actually, that's becoming a more challenging issue these days because a number of the College of Cardinals are taking on that strange progressive ideology that is so obviously ineffective or pulling. Shrinking the church as opposed to growing the church. So there is a worry on many of us with the hierarchy. Anyways, I don't want to talk so much about the hierarchy, but I want to talk about the spirituality of conversion. And obviously, G.K. Chesterton was a convert. I want to read a couple of selections from his book called The Catholic Church and Conversion. Published by Ignatius Press. It has a beautiful introduction by the original version had an introduction by Hilaire Belloc, one of Chesterton's friends, who wasn't a convert. But the new version by Ignatius Press has an introduction by Dale Alquist, who is a convert. So he's kind of following in the footsteps of Chesterton, where Hilaire Belloc was a friend, but he's my friend. When Hilaire Belloc starts his introduction, he sort of says, boy, for a cradle Catholic to be trying to describe and understand the experience of a convert, it's quite a risk, and it's a bit of an outside person trying to explain what's going on inside someone. Yet he nails a couple of really good points in that introduction. But, okay, so since it's Lent and since it's the time of RCIA programs, I'm sure many of you know what that is, Rite of Christian Initiation for Adults. And we're trying to help people embrace Catholicism. This book by Chesterton starts with an assessment of Catholicism, which a convert has to deal with, and that is the idea that embracing Catholicism, you're embracing a new religion, which is a great irony, or it's a great paradox, because obviously Catholicism is the oldest of Christian denominations, right? And when Chesterton is comparing Catholicism to other Christian denominations, he's primarily thinking of the Anglican Church of England, where he was most familiar with it, but also all the different Protestant denominations that sprung up in Europe after the Martin Luther revolution, we'll call it. I don't like to call it the Reformation. It wasn't really reforming the church at all. But here, let's analyze this notion of Catholicism as something new, as a novelty. It strikes me as in a peculiar way, a very interesting way to start his meditation on his conversion. Actually, I want to share four word pictures. The way to really get a real handle of G.K. Chesterton when you read him is to be aware of the word pictures he uses. At least this is how I read Chesterton and how I appreciate him. Be sure to stop and try to picture, and even in my artistic way, I sometimes even draw a little picture. As a matter of fact, I painted a picture, three pictures, a triptych for the fundraising banquet for the Chesterton Academy of the Holy Family High School last year. And those of you who may have seen that wonderful rendition, it was the way he starts Orthodoxy with a man jumping into a yacht to sail away from England, and then he finds he's back to England. That's how he described discovering Catholicism, or discovering the true faith. So anyways, here's the four pictures in this initial chapter. One is a novelty. And I want you to think, what word picture came to your mind when I said novelty? You might say, like, when I went on vacation with my family, which we primarily went to Wisconsin Dells, I loved Wisconsin Dells. It always reminded me of a fun week and all the rest. Today, I don't know if kids will appreciate Wisconsin Dells quite enough. I know we did. But anyways, I think of the many little trinkets that I brought back. It was the first bonsai tree, actually, that I bought. I remember buying a little, we call it a novelty. It was a little tree. It was a little pot. Didn't have anything growing in it yet, and I watered that baby, and I set it on my window ledge, and I think all that grew was a weed. So it really, I was expecting a beautiful bonsai tree that, you know, like Mr. Miyagi from that movie Karate Kid would have. Nothing of the sort. As a matter of fact, I think I just threw the pot away because all it looked like was a weed after the whole summer. But anyways, when Chesterton says a convert will look at Catholicism as something new, a new religion, he's going to use the word novelty. But he doesn't mean novelty quite in that sense. It's more like, if you could picture, when Ford invented the automobile, it was considered a novelty. You know, what's this horseless carriage doing around here? Life was a lot better before we had those stinky machines cluttering up the road.
Wow.
That was...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, this is brain wrinkling. And we'll come back to see how the theology fits in. The second word picture is a worrisome father worrying about his son going off to college. The third picture is an old man participating in the Olympics. Could be a race. It could be the javelin throw. Or it could be anything, any competition that the Olympic Games have. And if you see a 70-year-old man along with all the other 20 and 30-somethings or even teens, right? And then that old man turns out to be the winner. Okay, keep that picture in your mind. And maybe the fourth picture is a Protestant man changing, going from one denomination church to another. That's a little more of a abstract picture, but we'll get to it. So anyways, the idea that a convert will have to start thinking about the Catholic Church is something new to him, but he's obviously wrapped in the knowledge that it's the oldest church. And so he has to struggle with the idea that hadn't that old thing called Catholicism been proven wrong a long time ago, especially by the religion that my parents grew up in or I grew up in? If you're a Lutheran, you're a Methodist, you're an evangelical of some kind, you consider Catholicism as something old, but tried and found failing. Okay, but when what Chesterton is saying is he was drawn to Catholicism, he knew that it was old, but he was drawn to it because it was a novelty that was active, that was becoming real. Catholicism was reacting to the world, the society that he was living in a way that was young and full of energy. As a matter of fact, he says, you don't want a religion that's right where you are right. You want and you start to discover that you want a religion that's right where you are wrong. When you think of all the positions and thoughts that you have about life and the supernatural reality, the sacraments, what church means and what marriage and the family mean and what morality means, you want your religion to constantly helping you to grow, to become wiser, to be truer, as it were. So here's an interesting little quote. It says, it would be very undesirable that modern men should accept Catholicism merely as a novelty, but it is a novelty. It does act upon its existing environment with the peculiar force and freshness of a novelty. Even those who denounce it generally denounce it as a novelty, as an innovation, not merely a survival. What he means by that is a Protestant will denounce Catholicism if their child, let us say, is toying with the idea of becoming Catholic. The older adult who's more of a, shall we say, the established Protestant kind of Christianity, that adult will say, well, that young person is attracted to Catholicism for strange, novel reasons. He'll get over it. He'll see that life has proven such a religion to be wrong ultimately. You may like it because it finds smoke and incense kind of interesting. Might like it because Latin is interesting and intriguing. That's happening actually more and more today. There was an interesting article I read about a parish council type gathering where the pastor asked, how can we make our parish more attractive to young people? And someone on the parish council said, well, if we try the old mass, the Latin mass, it might work. It might help us reach those young people. Just strange kind of suggestion, isn't it, you might say. But I think there's something to that. There are a lot of young people that are attracted to that, the old mass, as it were. It's a good example for what Chesterton is talking about here. So as he's saying, Catholicism is sort of a novelty. It's not like the novelty that I picked up in the Wisconsin Dells and sort of tossed to the side. It's the sense that the automobile was a novelty or thought to be a novelty at the time of its invention, as people poo-pooed it. But then you realize, no, this is here to stay. You could say that even about electricity, right? Electricity itself. I like listening and watching those stories about Thomas Edison and Tesla. Maybe you know the car named Tesla. He was Thomas Edison's sidekick for a while. He was working with Thomas Edison, and turned out to be a great rivalry between the two. And the big money was behind Thomas Edison. Tesla went on his own, and actually, anyways, for many people, when they discovered and started to try to market electricity, a lot of people thought that was a novelty. Oh, this is crazy. This is the stuff of scientific horror movies, science horror movies. But of course, we all know and love electricity now, and it's novelty. It started as a novelty, but it took over the world, obviously. Or you could say the computer too, right? The very devices that we're glued to today, computers are. But I'm old enough to remember the early computers. You say, look at that. It's an interesting machine, but I'm not going to get one. You know. Now, of course, everybody has to have one, as it were. So that's the sense when Chesterton says...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah. When Chesterton says that a convert looks at Catholicism as he's attracted to it, it is a novelty. But it's not like a trinket, but it is a novelty because it's a new thing that comes onto the world scene and has a tremendous effect on the people. You might think of it as a relic too. Some people who are not Catholic and they're drawn to Catholicism for a lot of different reasons, of course. But you might think of the relic up in the attic. And that's what I think a lot of people might consider Catholicism. Well, it's an old relic, but it's been tossed. It's been put away. We don't go there anymore. I was thinking about that image of a relic up in the attic, and many times it would be something you just sort of, ooh, look at this. This is very interesting. How many times have we discovered something and we go, this is really neat. We put it on the shelf and it doesn't really affect us. But every now and then you might find something in the attic that is a relic that changes your life, right? Let us say you found something from your father from his war days. You found his helmet from a war gone by, and you never knew that your father was such a brave soldier. Maybe it had a Purple Heart that he never talked about, and it makes you then more of a person who appreciates the valor and the bravery of the soldiers in war, and you're not so much of a anti-military pacifist anymore. That's the kind of sense that if you're going to imagine Catholicism like a relic from the attic that changes your life. So, and I think we're probably a little late for a break here. let's see what else we can get into in this marvelous hour of the Winds of Change. Let's take a little break, but we'll come right back. I'm Father Tom Coyce. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
There is a lot to learn at St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy, where faith, virtue, and valor is the Academy's motto, where that motto expresses the values your child will learn here. Stop by St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy's website at ststanschicago.org. There you can meet the teachers, see the preschool, see the school's top academics, the science lab, and the Catholic faith. You will learn what our families have to say about St. Stan's. While you're on the site, you can schedule a tour to see St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. So rather than hear me talk and talk, go to ststanschicago.org and learn all about it.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560.
773-278-4560. And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Got to finish up my little intro to G.K. Chesterton's work. Is apologia pro vita sua. There's a little Latin phrase, apology for his life, a defense of his life. That's the famous book by John Henry Newman that he explains his conversion. G.K. Chesterton simply just says, his book is called The Catholic Church and Conversion. So anyways, I want to finish that little up. This introduction to that, as I encourage those who are in the RCIA program to pick up this book and read his reflections on his conversion. I know it will help you as you look toward fully becoming Catholic, but it also helps those of us who have always been Catholic since we were baptized. I don't like to say born Catholic, right? Nobody is born Catholic. We're baptized Catholic. Until we're baptized, we're not Catholic. But we can usually use the word cradle Catholic, and everybody knows what we mean. But listening to Chesterton struggle with the obstacles that he had to overcome will help even a cradle Catholic. As we encounter doubts to our faith, not necessarily wanting to leave, but sometimes, obviously, some people do, but it's certainly a challenge. I want to touch on that other picture of the worrisome father, worrisome in the sense that if he's a mainstream Protestant denomination, Protestant. Christian, and his son or daughter is toying with becoming Catholic. Chesterton says he knows that a typical Protestant wouldn't fear the son or daughter becoming another Protestant denomination as he would fear the son or daughter becoming Catholic. Many of the denominations were established against different struggles that were happening in history. And he readily recognizes that those struggles really are no longer struggles anymore. So the reason for establishing that church is no more. And you constantly have to back up and see history in a broader sense. Like, for instance, he says that this worrisome father, if he were to join the Albigensians, that was a heresy most in southern France primarily, but it was all around. The father knows, okay, you can become an Albigensian. You're not going to stay an Albigensian very long, because Albigensianism isn't the primary problem in society today. Though I see Albigensianism is growing. Let me just say that, since I bring it up, that Albigensianism was this dual view of human nature, where human sexuality could be interpreted in two radically strange opposite ways. If you have this dualistic version of the body and soul, and the body is really irrelevant or even evil, and the soul is all the things you have to take care of, then the leaders became these real aesthetic monks who would disavow marriage, actually, and even call marriage evil, while the people who didn't want to take that route could do whatever they want with the body, multiple wives, free sex, so to speak, abortion you could throw in there, though it wasn't that popular back then, but now, as we could see, it is. And so that Albigensian heresy sneaks up, especially when the hierarchy is corrupt. When the hierarchy shows moral failure, then it's easy for some priests or some leaders to point out the corruption of the leaders, the bishops will say, and they will say, well, the bishops are just fat and lazy and they have mistresses on the side. We will take our celibacy vows so strict that we will live them in such a way that we then begin to preach. We have chosen the higher road, and those who are married have chosen a evil road. We'll grant you sort of permission, but deep down, everyone knows that that human sexuality is evil, and you're not as strong or as high-minded, as holy as we are, because you are engaged in such a fleshy thing. That's the Albigensian heresy. But maybe we could try to get into that more. It's very fascinating. But Chesterton uses it in the sense that he pictures a man whose son is going off to college or daughter is going off to college, and he's more worried about them becoming Catholic than the other denominations that have popped up, and they've often popped up as a novelty in their own right against something that is also a novelty that will come and go and pass. You can actually make a connection between the Baptist churches of America and slavery. Many of the Baptist churches in the United States sprung up during the Civil War because some were bending over backwards to try to defend slavery, and others were jumping on the bandwagon and decrying slavery. So all these different Baptist churches came up. Now,
wow.
Wipe.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That is brain wrinkling. But wipe slavery off the menu as a huge problem, which And in reality, it has been wiped off in our own day and age, although the proponents and the fans of Black Lives Matter type events and speeches and all don't seem to have appreciated the Civil War. They don't seem to appreciate how so many people fought and died to eliminate slavery. And so therefore, this sense that the loss of the realization of why many of the Baptist churches were born in the first place is lost on modern day people that don't appreciate, because as I said, many of the Baptist churches were founded to defend slavery, and many of the Baptist churches were founded to oppose slavery. So that's why Chesterton would say, well, then I'm probably not going to be a Baptist. I'm not going to be a Baptist because I'm looking for something that is has a better track record on being right. And the last word picture I'm going to share with you, and then we've got to move on here, is the old man in the Olympics. He considers becoming Catholic kind of like an old man in the Olympics who amazingly wins. Because obviously we would assume that an old man in a 100-yard dash is not going to win. The youth have the vim and vitality. But he's saying that as he was attracted to Catholicism, it was like the old man winning, because these other new upstarts, shall we say, religions, kept failing where the old religion succeeded. Let's see. Let me try to end with another little wonderful quote from good old Gilbert Keith. Here we are. Let's see. There we go. I like this one. I believe it will be more and more an issue for the rising generation, the new young people, and for the generation after that, as they discover the actual alternative in the awful actualities of our time. And Catholics, when they stand up together and sing Faith of Our Fathers, may realize almost with amusement that they might as well be singing Faith of Our Children. And in this and in many cases, the return has been so recent as almost to deserve the description of a children's crusade. I love that. Faith of Our Fathers, we kind of sing that nostalgically.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, it is brain wrinkling. When you sing Faith of Our Fathers, you think of, oh, yeah, the faith of those people who came before us, those martyrs who gave such great witness, or the founding fathers of America that had such great faith in the Bible or in providence of God, and they did. But Chesterton is saying that becoming Catholic has this dangerous quality of changing us now. And children, young people, oftentimes will see that the times now need changing more than the older folks do. Now, there's two radically different roads that you can take if you think that the times radically need changing now. You could take the Black Lives Matter interpretation and say, we got to just tear down the whole institutions, anything that is institutional. Or you could take Catholicism more seriously and see, let's apply all the teachings and rulings and let's begin to build again, or do I dare say, build better, build back better. Isn't that what Biden is saying? Come on, man, let's build back better. We certainly can. Anyways, we'll take another little quick break, and then kind of to give a COVID update, which I think is something positive to hold on to. Anyways, I'm Father Tom Coyce. You are listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
The Pro-Life Action League and the pro-life community of Waukegan invite you to take part in front of Planned Parenthood Thursday, May 11th at 6 p.m. at 1601 North Lewis in Waukegan. This marks the first anniversary in front of Planned Parenthood's massive Waukegan facility. The fight against abortion is a long one. We thank God for His grace over the pro-life efforts in Waukegan and recommit ourselves to fight until its doors are closed. Join us Thursday, May 11th at 6 p.m. for a prayer vigil in front of Planned Parenthood at 1601 North Lewis in Waukegan. And pray with the Pro-Life Action League.
The Winds of Change. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Was that a technical snafu, Nick? Does one of us have to go to the punishment room? No, okay. I think you're right. This is the time of mercy, I would say. Anyways, God bless you. Let me switch gears from Chesterton and his reflections on his conversion to the topic du jour. We can't go 5 minutes without talking about COVID, right? I'd like to ask you to help me help children with a special prayer. I was talking to a lot of the kids at school the other day, and I said, boys and girls, please pray that Mr. COVID dies. They got a kick out of it. To call. It's very Franciscan. It's very Chestertonian to give personality to a non-person. So St. Francis of Assisi would always say, brother sun and sister moon. And so I'm saying, Mr. COVID, you must die. We must pray that Mr. COVID dies a quick and painful death. At least we could say something of the sort. Anyways, part of that, some little good news out of Eli Lilly's, that's a pharmaceutical company, they have some new news. And I'm just going to read it about here because I think we should all appreciative of it. It's not a new vaccine, but it's a new treatment. So I hope it gets the attention it needs. For some reason, we're all hanging on the idea that vaccines will save the day. But there are a number of problems with this vaccine that it certainly seems wise to listen to the conflicting scientific reports and wait on it. And while we're waiting on it, please, doctors and politicians from Biden on down, please let us have greater access to the success stories of the many treatments that are out there. We call them therapeutics. On the one hand, we could call the vaccine. And the vaccines that are out there are not really vaccines, too. There was a very interesting report by a Dr. Carrie Majed, M-A-D-E-J, if you want to look her up. She really is warning about you could say dangers. You could say all she's doing is pointing out the potential for great danger when these injections are going to alter your RNA or DNA. It's not, DNA and the
danger,
RNA.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger. No, Will Robinson. Robinson. Yeah. Danger.
Yeah, there's we don't know what will come about, and especially if it's permanent, and especially tied to, she even points out that one of the distribution methods of a vaccine, so-called, is a patch you put on your skin, on your arm or your hand, and that patch has hundreds of tiny little needles that will be injected into your skin, and it's not giving a kind of serum, or it's not giving a kind of a chemical. That it has actually technology. It's more like a computer chip being put into you, and that can then be controlled in very many other ways. There's this fear. The hesitancy about getting the vaccine, I think, is quite wise at this point. I want something like a vaccine to be successful. I want it to help us to get back to normal. Truth be told, because President Trump was so hopeful and pushing and pushing scientists and companies to get to it, and it would be a feather in his cap, so to speak. Though if these nefarious, bad sides of the, I'm not going to call it a vaccine, the injections, if the bad side of the injections do turn out to be so bad, then Trump's desire to help the country and the world through a good vaccine were thwarted. Some might have been thinking, he's got a political aim in his mind, and I've got we got political aims in our minds, and we're going to use his enthusiasm for, you know, what has been known as Operation Warp Speed, to forego certain tests and to get it approved by the FDA and the CDC quicker. They could have been using that enthusiasm to hide their enthusiasm to vaccine the whole world and have a certain kind of control over the world's population. Bill Gates has been known to give talks, and he's definitely a depopulation type ideologue. He sees the world population growing so much that he sees it's our responsibility to shrink the population. So with a RNA, mRNA or DNA altering injection, they'd be able to systematically wipe out vast numbers of people in the world's population, which he sees as a good thing. So those questions have to be asked, and we have to look seriously. Of course, when you listen to Dr. Carrie Majid, then you look at what other doctors are saying. They're just ripping her apart. But she deserves a listening, and good scientists shouldn't just name call and shouldn't just say you're silly and stupid. They should take what she's saying and give counter evidence if they can, which they're not doing. So that makes Dr. Majid a little more believable, right? Anyways, the good news here is Eli Lilly, and that's another pharmaceutical company on the scene now. They announced a new data from the randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled Blaze 1 Phase 3 study. How about that? And here's the strange words. The words demonstrating bamlanivimab, or it's called LY-COV555, 700 milligram dosage, I guess, and etesimab, I'm going to spell these out for you because you could look it up yourself here. BAMLANIVIMAB. BAMLANIVIMAB. And ETESEVIMAB. ETESEVIMAB. At a stronger dosage, 1,400 milligrams. Together, significantly reduce COVID-19-related hospitalizations and deaths, otherwise known as events, in high-risk patients recently diagnosed with COVID-19. These results provide additional efficacy and safety data that support the use of the dose recently granted both emergency use authorization by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and a positive scientific opinion by the European Medicines Agency Committee for Medical Products for Human Use. This Phase 3 cohort of Blaze 1 included almost 800 high-risk patients aged 12 and older with mild to moderate COVID-19 symptoms. There were 4 events in patients taking bamlanivimab with etesimivab and 15 events in patients taking placebo, representing an 87% risk reduction. Bamlanivimab and etesimivab together also demonstrated statistically significant improvements on key secondary endpoints. These results are consistent with those seen in other data sets from Blaze 1. In the previous Phase 3 cohort, the higher dosage, reduced the risk of hospitalization and death by 70% in the Phase 2 cohort. BAMI dose alone reduced the risk of hospitalization and ER visits by approximately 70%. The viral load reductions were also consistent with what was observed in the previous Phase 3 cohort. So this is pretty good news, but again, it falls into the category of therapeutics. Can we find some good treatments? There's these good treatments that are being hidden, and you got to wonder what's going on. Why? It just seems like a crazy conspiracy going on. It's such a strange. Why are some doctors so opposed to some tries? Everybody knows nobody likes Mr. COVID, and we all want to defeat him. But it seems like the ways to stem the spread and to help people who fall with this are mysteriously being silenced and are trying to keep it out of the population, as it were. As a matter of fact, thousands of doctors are, and the number's growing. Going back to the hydroxychloroquine treatment, they're saying that it helps, it works. This is a tremendous benefit. There's another treatment that's more of a nebulizer. Any of you have been in the hospital and you've had to breathe some kind of medicine through your nose, where they put like an oxygen mask on you, and then you're breathing in the mist. That's a nebulizer, of course. And there's steroid treatments that a number of doctors are saying, as soon as somebody gets sick, bring them in. Let's give them this. And why they're not being encouraged to go in quickly enough, and if they're deemed a risk that it will get worse, or as it is getting worse, get them on these things as soon as possible. To the life of me, I can't understand why scientists who would otherwise be interested and open to other scientific possibilities, hypotheses, and treatments, you know, you're having some success with it, go with it. It just seems, like there's another agenda being played out, or that they want to play out. And you can't help but think that people who are so anti-Christian, so pro-abortion minded, traditional Christian morality, let's just put it that way, excuse the phrase, but hell-bent on not going down that route and helping patients by making hydroxychloroquine. I'd be very interested if this Eli Lilly treatment of the bamlanivimab, if we'll hear some more about that. Probably not, right? So, anyways, I had to share that with you, and we just got a few minutes left here, and before we do, I want to share a beautiful tidbit from the consecration to Saint Joseph that we're doing in our parish. Saint Joseph is one of those saints that we all know about. Obviously, if you go into a Catholic church, you'll see a statue of Mary on one side and Joseph on the other, right? But there he is. I like to inform people, especially at weddings. You know, when you go into a wedding and you're doing your wedding practice, and usually it's when you come in, which side of the church would you like to be? Are you from the bride's side or are you from the groom's side? And the ushers will put you on one side for the bride's side and one side for the groom's side. And people always ask, well, which side is which? I always like to point out, well, look at the two statues in a classically adorned Catholic church. Mary will be on one side, Joseph will be on the left side. Usually Mary's on the left side, Joseph's on the right side. But the point is, the groom side is the side where Joseph is, and the bride side is the side where Mary is. Now, some more modern churches that don't plug into that kind of symmetry or tradition will put Mary and Joseph right next to each other. Maybe they feel sorry for Joseph being so far away from his special wife, Mary. But that leads to the interesting point. In the book about consecration to Joseph, we find that there was a mystic who had visions of Joseph telling Mary at one point that he too took a vow of chastity when he was young, as they were beginning to live together, and after obviously he showed his faith and love for her. He believed in her dream. She said an angel appeared to him and to her, and this through the power of the Holy Spirit that she received this child. And then she was going to live a life not as a normal married woman with natural relations. And then he shares with her the fact that he made a similar promise when he was young. So let's live together. Let's live this powerful life out. And of course, it changes the history of the world. Something beautiful to contemplate, isn't it? Well, you've been listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. I'm Father Tom Coyes.
To say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell of strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. words that you say when right from wrong has become so obscure, it does not take that.